So folks, this week and then next week, we'll be taking a step back to Psalm 136. Next week we're going to have an all-age service as we look at Psalm 136. We should have almost kept it for harvest, for it's the one that has the refrain about his love endures forever. But today, a bit of a change in some of the happier praise psalms. We're into the last of seven penitential psalms that we read about. So Psalm 143 is the seventh psalm that's described as a penitential psalm. It's saying sorry to God, or it's coming to God pleading for help. And there's regret that's in here. Michael Wilcox, in his little commentary, says, whatever its background, it's a prayer that emerges from deep distress. Whatever its background, it's a prayer that emerges from deep distress. So don't really know why, and it's a Psalm of David. What was the background? There are many thoughts and choices. But let me tell you just more personally, for me, many, many moons ago, Karen and I were married in 1986, started work in Derg Street Mission Hall in bottom of the Old Park Road. Manor Street used to run from the Old Park Road to the Cliftonville Road, and then they decided to build a 40-foot high piece wall through the middle of it. And so it was a colourful place. We worked there, just married, started our work, haven't met at Bible College or Bridal College, as I talk about, but we're there working away 1987 through to 1991. I also, see if you can find me there in the screen. Anybody? No, where's the white hair? I'm the wee boy with the white t-shirt and the black hair. But a wee gospel band called Into the Light. And we trekked the country. And I was working, Karen and I were just married, working away in Manor Street. Tuesday night was Bible study. Wednesday night was junior club and then senior youth club. Thursday night was prayer meeting. Friday night a practice with the band, or we were away playing somewhere. Saturday night, well, just depends, but often away playing somewhere. Sunday afternoon, Sunday school, about 100 kids squeezed into the wee hall with the rickety floor. It was like a trampoline. Maybe leaving there, then heading somewhere in Belfast, setting up the drum kit, then heading back home, grabbing a bite of tea, then going to the hall, running the gospel service in the evening, and then heading to wherever it was, only in Belfast. Could only manage it in Belfast with the band afterwards. Then back home, then a day off, and then it all started again. We're just married. Then Matthew came along a few years later. So there's a baby in the house. And I'm still on this treadmill. So much of this in this psalm resonates with what Eileen was sharing last night. I got to the place... that I was so busy for God, I had no time with God. And I remember one day I was heading out in the afternoon, Belfast City Mission talk about doing your 4 and 12s. It's impossible. 4 hours in the afternoon, 12 visits, 15 minutes a house, not a chance. But every afternoon out, thinking, oh Lord. And I was just dog tired. And I remember throwing the Bible open, which you shouldn't do. It's not good advice. And Val English always used to say, if you throw the Bible open like that, it'll probably open at the Psalms, because that's about the middle. And it did. And it opened at Psalm 143. And I read it, and it was like a shot, well, to the head or the heart, as the Lord spoke to me. So the 4 points that we'll be traveling our way through here are from probably 1998. So it's not a new sermon. Still has alliteration, can't help myself. Because it starts with distress. O Lord, hear my prayer. Listen to my cry for mercy. In your faithfulness and righteousness, come to my relief. Don't bring your servant into judgment, for no one living is righteous before you. The enemy pursues me. He crushes me to the ground. He makes me dwell in darkness like those long dead. The circumstances were different, but I felt distress. I felt I'm so busy serving God, and actually some of it just doing stuff that I love. Who wouldn't love battering the life out of a drum kit? Where's Andy? But my soul was just perishing. In his distress, verse 1 and 2, David talks about his position before God. Warren Wiersbe says, the basis of David's prayer is God's character. Hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for mercy. In your faithfulness and righteousness, come to my relief. Don't bring your servant into judgment, for no one living is righteous before you. You're a holy God. And David knew his place. Do not bring your servant into judgment. Here he discovers, and he is eloquent, he states his position before God as a servant before him, but then his position before the people. Look at verse 3. The enemy pursues me. He crushes me to the ground. He makes me dwell in darkness like those long dead. And that distress that was there in David's life, I felt it in a different way and from a different background, but I just felt crushed. I felt my soul was just getting dark. And here for David, it's that his enemy pursues him. We don't know again whether it's King Saul, whether it's his son Absalom, whether it's some other adversary. Again, back to the cave of Adullam and hiding out that you read about in 2 Samuel 15 through to 17. We don't know the background, but we do know. And here, David, the emotional pain of people wishing us harm, or even just talking about us. That's an experience all of us maybe have at different times. But here there is distress in David's life. He then just says his life just feels dry. Look at verse 4. It's feeling. Have you ever felt at the end of yourself? Faint or dismayed? Actually, shouldn't the next illustration now, Denise, I'm thinking about, and I shouldn't actually be sharing it. But Paula Radcliffe at the Athens Marathon Olympics, yep, just sat down in the curb. I have a better story for you. There was this lady decided whenever I worked in First Coal Rain, Karen and a few folks from church decided they would do this thing called the Glover Challenge. Anybody? Off to County Donegal to climb mountains. Sorry, Denise. What have we got on the screen? Please talk to me. Brilliant, Mike. Muckish. The Glover Challenge is that you start at ridiculous o'clock in the morning and you go over muckish. Sorry, Gladys. Yeah. Then you go over what's known, you guys, you Donegal guys, keep me right, over the Seven Sisters. Okay? So you start off over Muckish, then over the Seven Sisters, and then you finish off going over Errigal. Okay? Absolutely, Jean. Oh my goodness. Karen got to the end, or to the bottom, of Errigal. Hadn't really drunk properly, or taken on energy food, and just went, I can't go any further. So I just could have, like Paula Radcliffe, sat down and cried. To compound that, sorry Denise, it's been terrible now, I never thought this through. Ended up saying, actually to get to the minibus that takes you back to the start, you have to walk about a mile and a half or 2 miles out to the road. And just nothing left. Just feeling spent in a completely different sense for me, folks, spiritually. That is how I felt. Just empty. My spirit grows faint within me. My heart within me is dismayed. Feeling that you're just failing. And actually just feeling, yeah, I'm not doing a very good job. I feel like a failure. And then I remember the days of long ago. I meditate on all your works. I consider what your hands have done. And thinking, Lord, I remember when things were better. I remember when I first came to faith and I was just alive and buzzing. Nostalgia or challenge? Lord, I remember the days of long ago. Is that nostalgia? Oh, you remember the good old days? Somebody said to me just earlier, last night, oh, it was just like Ballywillan back in the day. I remember those days of long ago. And do we hanker after them just because of memories? Or is it a challenge? Well, actually, let's get doing stuff. But it almost compounds that sense of feeling that you're letting the Lord down. Memories here, I remember. I meditate on your works. Taking time, meditation, to talk about the seven stomachs of a cow, chewing the cud. That you take that in and to meditate on it is to turn it over. And to turn it over, and to turn it over. I consider your ways, the little word if you like, muse. Memories, meditation, musing on, just reflecting back and remembering. Is it nostalgia, or is it a challenge to pick ourselves up? Will the Lord pick us up and keep us going? Remembering, yearning. Look at verse 6. I spread out my hands to you. Lord, my soul thirsts for you like a parched land. For as the deer pants for streams of water, my soul pants after you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Where can I go to meet my God? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they'll be filled. Folks, what about you and I and our thirst for the things of God? This is a deep heart cry. I know you'll find this hard to believe, but again, and it is 1980s. At Bible College, myself and a big English fella, Ian Clark, for a period of time, used to go out in the morning jogging. I know. And the thing that kept me going was under the stairs at the Bible College, there was a big green sofa. That was my target, that I can get back in the door and just collapse in a heap and then get a big drink of water. But every morning, Ian and I went out and jogged up through Dunmurry Lane, up into the village, back down through the little park and back down to Glenburn House. But there was a yearning. There was a target. There was something you were going for. And it was keeping you going. I'm going to get there. I'm going to get to the end. Feeling in distress. Feeling that your soul is dry. Folks, the next thing, David, is praying for direction. Verse 7 through to 10. I mean, there's answer me, show me, rescue me, teach me. Answer me quickly, O Lord, for my spirit fails. Don't hide your face from me, or I'll be like those who go down to the pit. Let the morning bring me word of your unfailing love, for I have put my trust in you. Show me the way that I should go. For to you I lift up my soul. Rescue me from my enemies, O Lord, for I hide myself in you. Teach me to do your will. For you are my God, and may your good spirit lead me on level ground. Verse 7 here is desperation. Answer me quickly, Lord. It's desperation. Verse 8 is looking for direction. Show me the way that I should go. Let the morning bring me hope. That picture in Scripture, the morning is that place of hope and looking forward. Let the morning bring hope. Show me the way that I should go. Psalm 90 verse 14 says, satisfy us in the morning, Lord, with your unfailing love. But here, show me the way that I should go. Verse 9, rescue me. Verse 9, rescue me from my enemies, O Lord, for I hide myself in you, knowing God's protection. For you are my rock and my fortress. Psalm 71, verse 3. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, this is a thinker, this one, okay? You have to think the old English. That which makes us flee to our God may be an ill wind. So that which makes us run to God may be a difficult thing, an ill wind. But it blows us good, takes us in the right direction. And then he says, there is no cowardice in such flight, but much holy courage. Let me read that as one. It's old English, but it just makes sense. That which makes us flee to our God may be an ill wind, but it blows us good. There is no cowardice in such flight, but much holy courage. Knowing God's protection as we run and hide ourselves in him. For me, folks, way back in Manor Street, the clinker was verse 10. For me, this is the biggie. Teach me to do your will, for you are my God, and may your good spirit lead me on level ground. Teach me to do your will. It actually took me a year and a half, because I knew the Lord was saying to me, Gordy, you're working in the mission hall. You're more than busy. You've now a young family. And you're still playing in that band. And something's got to give, or you're not going to survive. Something's got to give. And I wish I had figured my animations properly, because I could have had the band then disappearing. It took me a year and a half, but I eventually said to the guy, I says, guys, look, 6 months left, and I have to stop playing, because I'm just, there's just too much going on. It's not fair and Karen, and it's killing me as well. And that which is good, it's a gospel band going round to playing missions and churches all around the country. Why should, you know, goodness me, you're serving the Lord, Gordy. Also loved playing the drums. But it had to go. Teach me to do your will is so much different than show me the way that I should go. Oh Lord, show me the way that I should go. Yes, 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 yes. Sounds so holy, doesn't it? Teach me to do your will is a completely different thing. In fact, just going back, see the big tall fella in the picture in the band? Ian Simons used to play for Distillery, used to play for Harlan Wolf Welders. Okay, back in the day, so wish Brian McLaughlin was here today. But actually, Boys Brigade Camp, Alan Morrison, Raymond, I don't know if you remember, used to play for Cool Rain way back when. Ian Simons used to play for the Welders, for Distillery. Boys Brigade Camp in Jersey. Football match in between all the bell tents that were set out. How many anybody remembers BB camps like that? The bell tents round the side and the football pitch in the middle where you did all the tent sports in the morning. And we played a football match at BB camp. And Alan and Ian commented on their own game. They were in the same team. They were the two best players. And they commented on their own game about how good they were. And the game played on and played on and played on. And the other team, of which I was in, but I was useless, was kind of like, we're going to beat these boys. And they were running about the football pitch. Marcy, if you get me the ball now, I could just do this and I could do that and whatever. And the two boys commentated on their own game about how good they were and what they were going to do. And they got beat. And at a camp, if you've ever been in one of those camps, there's a wee phrase or there's stuff that happens that kind of carries on for months. And the phrase was this, You boys just talk a good game. You boys just talk a good game. And that stuck with me forever. Lord, show me the way that I should go. Lord, teach me to do your will. They're two completely different things, although they're related. And folks, so often in church, we talk a good game. Oh, we should do this, and we should do that, and we should do the other. I think of Louis John Moxon from Project Evangelism in 38 Mark Street back in the day. His line was, he who gets the vision gets the job. Lord, teach me to do your will. Lord, show me the way that I should go. Knowing is one thing, doing is another. But for me, in this circumstance, in my circumstance, actually I had to leave something that I loved doing. And it was right to do it. And my goodness, it was a gospel band. But I had to step away from it for the good of my own soul and my relationship with the Lord. I don't know what this says to you this morning. Back to the Psalm, verse 11 and 12. For your name's sake, O Lord, preserve my life. In your righteousness, bring me out of trouble. In your unfailing love, silence my enemies. Destroy all my foes. I mean, goodness, so this is quite harsh. But the last words, five words, for I am your servant. And a servant does what their master wills. Again, Spurgeon says, this is a warrior's prayer. And it smells of the dirt and the dust of battle. Folks, serving God and being obedient to him at times is not pretty. And at times is painful. But here David was saying, for the good of his own soul, he needed to be living as God was calling him. Verses 11, in the first part of verse 12, he gets a restored perspective. It's about God's glory, God's character, God's love and justice. And then it finishes with a restored position, with a confidence, Lord, I am your servant. I'm going to do what your will is. As we draw to a close, this is God and the stuff of life. And maybe for you this morning, the Lord is reminding you that you need your soul restored. Lord, my soul thirsts for you. Maybe for you this morning, as it was for me way back when, and actually I still live and struggle with the same stuff, is it a rebuke? Lord, don't bring your servant into judgment. I need a slap on the wrists to pull myself back into line, or for you to pull me back into line. So maybe these words this morning, rather than restorative, maybe for you the start of restoring is maybe getting a wee scolding and your life rebuked. Or maybe it's just that of being refined. Lord, teach me to do your will. For you are my God, and may your good spirit lead me on level ground. Hebrews 12, verse 4 onwards, there's a passage that talks about, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, for the Lord disciplines those he loves. He punishes everyone that he accepts as a son. And then it goes on to say, no discipline seems easy at the time, but painful. But later on, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Way back in 1980, this was a rebuke for me that refined me. And it's a work that's still ongoing. Philippians 1 and 6, read it and mentioned it last night, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ. But our hearts need restored. Every now and again, the Lord needs to rebuke us because he wants to refine us to make us more like our Lord Jesus. For our faith and our journey with him, it's not about us. It's about Christ and me.